I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, dear listeners. This episode is sponsored by Spoken, which is a very convenient way to learn English with messaging apps that you probably already have on your phone. Apps like Line or WeChat or WhatsApp or Viber or Facebook Messenger. You can have your English lessons through your messaging app. It's like having an English coach in your pocket. And essentially, you're having private lessons with trained native speaking instructors. They send you tasks, you respond to them and send them back. And one of the cool things about this is that you're not fixed to a specific lesson time. Now, if you have one-to-one lessons with a teacher, you're fixed to that particular time. You agree on the time for the lesson and that's it. You're fixed to that time. But with Spoken, you can do the tasks whenever you want because it's all done through messages, including lots of voice messages, by the way. So you're not just typing, you're also speaking when you're working with Spoken. So you get a task from your instructor, and it's up to you when you do it and when you respond. So there are no fixed lesson times. You can just fit your practice into your life whenever it's convenient for you. And remember, sign up with Spoken to get a free 60-minute one-to-one private lesson with a trained native speaking instructor, and that includes a free assessment of your current English skills. And there are no strings attached. You can take the free 60 minutes, and then it's up to you whether you sign up for a course or not afterwards. There are no strings attached, which is great. It's a great offer. Also, listeners to this podcast receive 20% off the first month of their plan, regardless of which plan they sign up for. So 20% off anything for the first month. To qualify for all of this and for more information, just use my URL, which is getspoken.com/LEP, or click a Spoken logo on my website. You're listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk. Hello again, folks, and welcome back to another episode featuring the Pod Pals, Amber and Paul. In this episode, we discuss comedy in different countries, including what makes comedy funny, what can make comedy culturally inappropriate, whether British people have a different view of comedy to other cultures, and whether understanding comedy is just about understanding the language, or if there's more to it than that. This is clearly the topic which I'm a bit obsessed with at the moment, how comedy or humour can reveal our cultural differences in the most striking ways. Perhaps comedy is the key to truly understanding our cultural values somehow. I often talk about how learners of English often don't find British comedy funny, and that this is a pity for me. One of the worst things I can hear is someone dismissing British humour or comedy as simply not funny, right? You've heard me say it on the podcast before. I don't really mind if people say our food or weather is bad, but don't touch the comedy, basically. But honestly, when I see comedy from other countries, like when the shoe is on the other foot and I'm watching comedy from other countries, like TV comedy in France, where I live, I have to admit that I often don't find it funny. And I do find myself saying things like, oh, this is French comedy, meaning French comedy simply isn't funny or only works on one level. So is that true, or am I being hypocritical? I don't really know. Anyway, these questions are at the heart of the discussion in this episode, which also involves the three of us listening to and discussing a video that I've been sent many times by listeners of this podcast. Listeners have sent this video to me more than any other video. I wonder if you know what that video could be. You'll find out in this episode as we listen to it and discuss it. Unfortunately, Paul had to leave halfway through this episode because he had a live radio interview scheduled. He's a busy man who's in demand all over the place. But after he leaves, Amber and I continue the discussion, which goes on to discuss my recent episodes about British comedy, and we revisit the subject of Alan Partridge. So, without any further ado, let's get back to my co-working space and jump into the conversation once more. So, here we go.
Amber and Paul are on the podcast. Amber and Paul are on the podcast. Amber and Paul are on the podcast. Amber and Paul are on another podcast. Paul's a very funny boy. His laugh I very much enjoy. Amber's got a lovely voice. If I could choose an accent, hers would be my choice. Yeah.
Now then, what I wanted to do was actually play something to the two of you. Okay. That's why I've asked you both to wear your headphones so you can hear what I'm playing on my computer. So I'm going to play you a video which people send to me all the time.
Okay.
And I've been saving this one up because I wanted to have someone else to talk to about this.
Right.
All right.
Because people keep sending this to me going, you know, hey, I thought you might enjoy this, or what do you think of this?
Okay.
And so this is the thing I've been sent more than anything else. I get sent things like videos and memes and stuff quite a lot by my audience. Sometimes it's like the same thing, like the 11 video. Do you know that one? The two Scottish guys in the lift.
Oh yeah, that's a good video.
Is it the voice activated?
The voice activated lift, and it's two Scottish guys, and they're like 11, and the lift goes, "I'm sorry, could you repeat that?"
Yeah,
11, and the lift doesn't understand the Scottish accent.
There's loads of videos, real videos, like with Alexa and Google and all the rest of it. Yeah. Scottish people talking.
Right. So that one's been sent to me, and also I've been sent what British people say versus what they mean a lot of the time, which is that Anglo-EU translation guide.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I did an episode about it, and it was called What British People Say Versus What They Mean, and guess what? It did much better than my other episodes recently.
Of course it did.
Because of the title, the clickbaity title.
Yeah.
But this thing that we're going to listen to is the one that people send me more than any other. I'm not going to tell you what it is yet. We're just going to listen to it, and I want you to tell me what you think is going on, and just generally what you think of it.
Okay.
So I'll play you a few minutes, I suppose, and then I'll pause it and ask you what you think. Here we go.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, this is WMGC from Detroit, and I'm your host, Mr. John McAllister Jr. And tonight in my show, we have a special guest from London, Great Britain. His name is Mark Schofield. So, Mark, hello.
Hello, yes, hello. Yes.
Okay, Mark, do you like my show?
Yes, of course, yes. It's absolutely fantastic show, yes.
All right, pausing it there.
Okay.
First impressions?
It's a voice work. Like, they've got some great accent effects going on there.
I think it's either one guy or multiple guys who are either from somewhere like Amsterdam or Northern Europe, and they're making fun of English people.
Okay. There's two guys, actually. Okay. There is a third guy on the stage that we haven't heard yet.
Okay.
But yeah, there's some accent fun.
Yeah.
And they're not English.
No. And they're not very good at imitating English people.
Really? So
isn't the first one went to be American?
No.
My show.
Yeah, but then as soon as he's like, I've got a special guest from London, and the guy's like,
He's meant to be English, but the guy presenting, is he? He's supposed to be American.
The guy who kind of speaks like this
like
is
this,
from America. Welcome to the radio show.
Yeah,
this guy's meant to be American. And they
yes.
That's an English guy, apparently.
Yeah,
let's hear a bit more.
Okay, Mark, so tell me, please. You're a musical producer, that's right. So tell me, please, about what are you producing right now?
I don't understand what you're saying.
Okay, I'll repeat. You are a musical producer.
Yes.
What are you producing right now?
Okay. I think I understand you. Okay. Yes. You know, I'm from London. I talk a bit.
What
is so bad? I can see how it's funny though. But I'd be interesting to find out where this comes from. But it definitely comes. I mean, I'm because I get it all the time. Where because sometimes I cut my T's off when I say, instead of saying butter, I'll say butter, yeah. And then so people make fun of like the glottal stop nature. But it's just it's such a terrible imitation. Mm-hmm. And because I appreciate good imitations, like I just find it so terrible.
There's a difference between a good impression and a bad impression. And
but the people are dying of laughter, so I know that they can't tell the difference.
Yes. But it's not. They're not trying to be good. They're trying to capture an essence or something that's English, and that kind of stutteriness. I mean, yeah. I like it. I like the kind of like showman American and this kind of stuttering English. I think it's a nice combo. They're not trying to sound English. They're trying to sort of find something awkward, and I can't quite speak, and I can't get it out, and I don't really know like what you're talking about.
People love this, right? And that's why they send it to me. They're like, "This is, you know, we'd love to know what you think of this." So people love this, and that's why they send it to me. And so people are genuinely finding this hilarious.
I don't know what they're doing on camera, because we're just listening to the audio. Like the joke's been made now. Do you know what I mean? Like he's sort of like no, and he's stuttery, and it's like they
What's
have
next?
To do something
more,
else because otherwise it's sort of very boring.
Yeah. But apparently this is what they think we sound like.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I can hear that.
You can hear that, okay. Yeah, but we're just like, that's us, is it?
It's an exact, of course, it's just like when I'm like, "Unter the Germans!"
Yes.
You know, no one sounds like that. It's just the exaggerated version.
Uh-huh. Hello, folks. I'm just pausing the podcast here for a second because I'm sitting here editing this now, okay? I recorded this, like, last week? And I'm sitting here in the SkyPod editing this now. And I just needed to point something out because it just made me laugh. I've just been sitting here laughing on my own. So you heard the impression, which is, that kind of thing. And then when Paul starts speaking, he sounds exactly like the guy in the TV show. So maybe it's true. Maybe we really do sound like that. Anyway, I'm just going to play that back to you again because it made me laugh, and maybe you'll enjoy it as well. And then we'll just carry on.
I can hear that.
You can hear that, okay?
Yeah,
but we're just like that's us, is it?
It's an exact. Of course, it's just like when I'm like, "Unter the Germans."
Yes.
You know, no one. No one sounds like that. It's just the exaggerated version.
Uh-huh. Okay. So you've still got no idea where this comes from?
No.
Northern. They must be Northern Europeans.
You're thinking Northern European.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's listen to a little bit more.
It'd be
about...
It'd be funny if it was actually English people.
So the guy's a musical producer.
Yeah.
Okay.
Got that.
"You are a musical producer, that's right." That's what the guy said. So, So I guess it must genuinely be like this for these people when they hear English people speaking, especially like sort of a person with a London accent.
Yeah, totally.
And they've it's just a noise to them, isn't it? Right?
Absolutely, I understand about what I say, yes?
Mark, I don't understand any word you're saying, you know? It looks like you're chewing a lemon or something. You know, it's...
Looks like you are chewing a lemon or something. I've heard that about a billion times. Of like, "Oh, you speak like you've got a potato in your mouth."
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yes. Yeah, all the time.
Lots of stuff that English people swallow their words. They speak like they've got a potato in their mouth.
I get that. People always say, "Oh no, swallowing words and mumbling." And it's just like, no, you don't understand English. They sound perfectly, you know, clear.
Understandable. I can understand every single syllable of what they say, but to you, it just sounds like
it sounds garbled because you don't understand what they're saying. Yeah.
It's not something inherent to the language. Like,
no, but it's the same thing. Like when we make people who make fun of Spanish people, who make fun of
You do a Spanish voice.
I do the Spanish voice. Like I make fun of them because I understand what they're saying, but it's still fun to do the voice, to be like, "Hombre, lo que pasa es que estamos aquí en la playa, hombre, comiendo la paella, tortilla, sangría." Like
it's good.
I'm actually saying, I don't know. It's just like what bothers me is. But I completely understand why it's funny, and I get, and it does, like, we can sound like that to people who don't speak the language.
Absolutely.
But being a linguist, like, it annoys me when people make like gross generalizations of like language imitations like that. Even there was a guy who came through Paris. I can't remember what his name was, but he was a comedian from Singapore, I think. And he would just go on and do these different Orion or something like that. He would his stand up set was just literally like, "Oh, and this is what German people sound like," and he would say a sentence, and then and he'd be like, and this is what Spanish people sound, and then this is what French people are, and this is what, and there was no like story or content. Yeah. It was just like, hey, look, I can imitate other accents, like. Yeah.
Because you've got to have like the jokes, the material in there too.
Yeah.
Like, I it's just because I appreciate, I'm sure I would show that to anyone French and they would be on the floor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And all the comments are like, oh, this is brilliant. This is hilarious. I'm going to try and find that when the third guy comes in.
What is your business?
Okay.
So the guy's a musical producer and he's with his artist who he's producing. And then we're about to meet this artist who he's producing now, okay?
Project.
All right.
Yes. This is a musical project. His name is Cinco Trapal.
Okay.
Spanish.
Yes, he's a famous musician from India, Calcutta.
So not
India, Calcutta.
India, Calcutta, not Spain.
Okay, so from Calcutta.
So guess what we're going to get now?
Oh, the stereotypical Indian accent.
We're going to have the Indian accent.
Right.
Calcutta, yes.
Okay, so I'll interview him. All right. Hello, how are you? What is your name?
My name is Rapata Frita Pascatopali.
The audience are lapping it up.
Of course they are.
But, okay, how do you feel about the whole idea of copying the Indian accent then?
Well, it's complicated because it's about who you can laugh at. And, you know, the whole punching up, punching down. It's not like saying it's easy. I mean, you can laugh at English people and say they're silly and we feel comfortable because we are English.
Yeah.
Why not? We can laugh at ourselves. If you kind of mock Indian accents, it kind of can feel a bit cheap, especially if it's done badly.
In England, I think it's a very bad idea to copy an Indian accent unless
you do it well.
Unless you do it really well.
Really well.
Or you're Indian. But I can't really imagine a white comedian doing an Indian accent. Even if he does it really well, I think he's just... That wouldn't really happen. I can't remember.
I think it could do it in England. A white comedian could do it, but it depends what they were saying and why they were doing it. And because it's such a sensitive area.
I feel like this sketch is quite innocent, really, because all they're doing is just... Yeah. The point is, like, we find these people's accents difficult to understand. That's the point.
Well, which is true. I mean, we went to India, me and my husband, recently, and he was having the hardest time because I felt that everyone was speaking great English, like much better than French people.
Yeah.
And he was like, what are they saying? What are they saying? Yeah. And I was like, come on, their English is so good. Everyone's English is great.
Yeah.
And he just couldn't get,
French people always say the Indians are impossible to understand because a lot of them do business with them over the telephone. And it's very difficult for them, apparently.
Yeah.
So I find this fairly innocent in the sense that it's just like, you know, well, let's just copy the accents because it's funny because we don't understand them.
Well, it's like that. There's a bunch of YouTube videos which is like, here's what every language sounds like when you don't speak the language. Yeah. And I can't remember if it's one guy or whatever who goes through different, just, he's not even talking. He's just, and it's not overly stereotypical. It's actually pretty good. Like it's the noises he's making.
He's capturing the exact sound.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
without knowing
any
of the words.
They're like wildly exaggerated.
Yeah.
But I can understand why it's funny.
Does it make a difference then if this guy doing the Indian accent, does it make a difference if he's Indian or not?
I think for this type of sketch, like if it's an Indian, you'd be like, oh, he's just doing his voice, like without exact, like.
I feel like this would be unacceptable if the guy doing the Indian voice was a white guy. Maybe even with his skin color changed to make him look Indian. That would be totally unacceptable, right?
You notched it up a level of unacceptability.
Yeah, but I mean, if the guy's doing, he's being an Indian character and he's doing this Indian voice, how are they going to do it without making him look like an Indian? I mean, that sort of thing is totally...
Well, I mean, that's the Ali G.
Well,
if I'm black, maybe you will see black.
Yeah.
I mean, he didn't put any makeup on.
That was the point with Ali G, that we didn't know what his ethnicity was. That's the whole point. He acts like he's a black guy. He's got a name that suggests he's Pakistani. And yet he kind of looks like a white guy.
Mm.
And it turns out he's a white Jewish guy from the suburbs.
But no one, when he said, you know, is it because I'm black? No one ever said, well, you're not.
Yeah, because
they believed it. It's like if you believe it, they see it.
Whenever Ali G got into trouble and someone, you know, for example, tried to remove him from a situation, he would say, is it because I is black? And no one was ever able to respond to that because they're totally disarmed by even the possibility that there could be a racial situation going on, even though he didn't even look black at all, and he obviously wasn't. But the power of the taboo of being racist is so strong that it just meant that people were unable to even do the basic social thing of saying, well, no, you're not black, are you? Even calling it into question.
I've got to the stage now, I don't know whether it's with age or I'm just fed up of all of this like controversy for nothing that comes out. Like, I think we all just need to just chill out a bit.
Yeah.
And like, if that's I've presumed that that's a white person doing it.
No, it's
not. It doesn't bother me at all.
It's not actually, it's an Indian
guy.
Is
it? Okay.
Yeah. But
where are they from? Can we know?
And can you still think in Northern Europe? Well, it's Russia.
Okay.
It's Russia.
It's a Russian TV show. I can't remember exactly what it's called. I think it's just called Russian Comedy Club.
Okay.
And so basically that's... And it's a very famous sketch show. You can see the video now. There they are sitting there. Let's listen to a bit more.
Your name is Rubble Day Rumbledis.
He's Indian.
What, you don't think he's Indian?
No.
Where is he from then?
I don't know, but he's not from
India.
He's
just like a Russian guy with dark skin?
Yeah, he's just some... I don't think he has a stereotypical... Whatever.
I must say, now that I'm seeing it, I'm even more disappointed. Because,
why?
Because the joke was thin anyway. It was just like, they sound funny. There's no costume. There's no staging. There's no movement. They're just sitting down on chairs. All it is like an impression, but there's nothing. Because if they were doing funny things physically as well, maybe we could go with it.
Yeah.
But it really is very flat. They've not got any... There's no joke. It is just like, these accents sound funny.
Yeah, that's see. When I first watched this, which was some time ago, I was first of all disappointed because I thought it's just, you know, I thought, oh, it's not very funny. It's they haven't really made the stuff very sophisticated. And then I thought, oh God, I'm just doing that thing that I always worry about, which is like when my students watch some comedy that I think is great and they're like, oh, it's not funny. It's just, you know, they don't get it. So I'm doing exactly the same thing from another angle.
Yeah, but it's not you don't get it. It's you do get it.
Yeah.
Like, because the difference is that we're not Russian, so we don't understand what their background, like growing up is and how they relate to those different accents.
Mm-hmm. Paul there just said that we're not Russian. And listening back, I just wish that at the time I'd said this when he said, well, we don't understand it because we're not Russian. I should have said, well, you're certainly Russian to the radio interview, Paul. I wish I'd said that, but I didn't. Okay, good.
Like, they've got a very different relationship to English people than we do. Like, it's difficult to judge because it's Russian. If that came from England... It's all based on context, right? And how different people react to different, and what their relationships to different nationalities are.
Yeah.
You know, like our relationship to Italians and Spanish people are completely different to what Russians would be, completely different to what Americans might be. You know, if I'm making fun of French people in America, it doesn't go over as well, or it doesn't, because they don't have the context of the you know, they just think of French people, ratatouille, Amélie, not even Amélie, they don't even know what Amélie is, but they just see French and they go, oh, you know, level one, this is what French, but if I'm making fun of France because I live here and it's kind of like a level two or three deep joke, they're unable to get it, so I don't know, it's interesting.
On balance then.
But I have to run, I'm so sorry.
Paul's got to run.
Because I'm going to be late, it's live radio, so I have to be on time, because otherwise they're going to kill me.
Live
okay, mate.
Radio.
Thanks, Lepsters, I love you guys, and thanks so much for having me on the podcast.
You're
and
welcome.
And it's really quick what I'm saying. Anyway, all right, bye.
Bye bye.
Bye.
Bye, Paul. Turning
bye,
off Paul's
Paul.
Microphone.
Run.
Paul's doing la bise.
Next week for the show.
Cheers, mate.
By
yes.
The way, you said 28th.
I did say 28th.
29th, you can't make.
I'm not sure. I'll get back in. Addie sent me a message today, so I'll reply to her.
All right, cool. Yeah. You said I can't make it on one of my. Anyway,
okay. All right. Cheers, mate.
No,
bye bye.
Bag.
Don't forget your bag.
Bye.
Cheers. Bye bye.
Bye, Russians.
Okay, so on balance then, what's the judgment on this video then?
I mean, Paul is right in terms of we do appreciate things on different levels, and it's true that like Nico showed me films which are like cult classics here in France, and I kind of like only like them a little bit. So yeah, there's a level of like cultural appreciation, but here there isn't anything. It's not sophisticated. I think essentially this is a very unsophisticated comedy, but it's also in front of a massive studio, like it's big audience. It is grand public, you know, as they say, it's kind of meant to please everyone.
Yeah.
And that kind of comedy often is like bottom of the barrel.
Because we have that kind of comedy in England
and
as well.
And it's shit, a lot of it. Not all of it, but a lot of it is sort of, you know, pretty basic stuff. And we, as I think, people are really interested in comedy. We do comedy, we perform it, we write it, we watch a lot of it, we talk a lot about it, we think about it. You know, we kind of find this quite unsophisticated. So it's quite unsophisticated comedy on every level. Like, it's not saying anything. The staging is very, very poor. And it's appealing to perhaps a very, very big public.
Is it possible that we're thinking about it a bit too much?
No, because if things are funny, they're funny. You know, like if they, you know, some things are funny for everyone. Mm. And then it's like French people, they do like falling over comedy a bit more, like physical comedy. That's why they love Mr. Bean, and he's less popular in Britain, for example. Yes. Whereas Blackadder, very wordy. Very popular in Britain.
That's true, listeners. Mr. Bean, not popular in the UK. We sort of like people like to think that they're very sophisticated in their tastes with comedy, and when you say, "Oh, Mr. Bean," they're like, "Oh, no, it's not really my sort of thing, actually," you know, because it's so unsophisticated and sort of you know, broad in its appeal. And people have said, "I prefer Blackadder," which is the other show that Rowan Atkinson famously was in. Great show,
really good show. But then, since moving to France and studying physical theatre and clown and stuff like this, I watch Mr. Bean with new eyes. I mean, he's a genius.
Yeah.
He's an actual genius. Like, sometimes I can watch a sketch and I just marvel at it. They're so good. They're so tight. They're so clever. He's really, I think, fantastic.
Yeah.
But it's taken me a really long time to see that.
Right. You have to kind of like fall out of love with it and then rediscover it again.
You've
got
to see it in a new way. So are we being unfair to this? Surely, because we can't be fair to it. We're not Russian and we don't know any of the context, and none of these people are of our favourites. Like, maybe these are big stars in Russia.
I think so. I think they're well-known guys, yeah.
And, you know, so it's like if we had like three really famous people who normally do other things, sitting up doing stuff like that in England, we might all be falling about crying. Crying. I mean, because there's nothing funnier than a Russian accent. We love a Russian accent. Imagine like three people trying to be Russian spies and, you know, killing English people. We would find that hilarious.
Careful. I'm not going to get into that. I'm not going to go there.
Okay. I'm risking my life. But do you know what I mean? Like, we can't be fair. So, you know, we might, Russian people might watch something of us doing something very similar and just think, God, that's terrible.
Yeah, it's all about perspective, isn't it? It's a perspective, and context is everything.
What really, is there comedy which really loads of people find hilarious?
Absolutely everyone.
Yeah.
I think it's the kind of stuff that you see on an aeroplane. You know, the kind of, I tell you the thing that absolutely everyone could enjoy is watching videos of people falling off chairs, people playing tricks on each other. That sort of thing is the sort of generic stuff that will appeal to the widest audience. It's basically home videos of cats falling over.
And that is funny.
That's
but
the
then,
thing.
Like, some people love it so much. I mean, look at the Japanese, and they've got so many of those weird, like terrifying, weird.
Well, you say that, Amber.
Not maybe so many, but like the ones we do see filtering through, they seem sort of shocking.
I found it very interesting that before I went to Japan, I saw that the stuff that I saw on British TV was usually on some Friday or Saturday night entertainment show with like Clive James or something, or Chris Tarrant or something like that. And they'd always show, hey, here's a clip from a wacky Japanese game show.
Yeah.
And it would always be some game show that would be full of like really cruel things happening.
Yes.
Like poor guys like having to swim through freezing cold water, or getting electrocuted, or getting beaten by you know, canes or things like that. You know, that was the stuff that I saw in England. And I expected that all Japanese TV would be people getting smashed over the head and things like that. And I'd watch Japanese TV and it's just not like that
not
at all.
Do you think it's just confirmation bias? We imagine that that's all they love, so that's all we look for.
Absolutely. There is an element in British culture that we think that Japanese TV is full of people suffering and in pain. But actually, some of it is. Some of it
is. This is the famous but that Paul was talking about, because they do have that but.
Yeah.
that's not it. And it sort of, it weaves into the wider notion of their nation and their identity and where it comes from is obviously more complex than we could imagine. Humor is so complicated because obviously even in, you know, if you look at things that we found funny maybe 20 or 30 years ago in the UK, they're not funny now.
Mm.
Just that they pitched so weirdly, you know, whether it's a little bit racist or a little bit sexist or just, you know, it just doesn't work. And when we were talking about this, I think the other day, but like, what are we doing now that we'll look back on and be like, oh my gosh, I can't believe we could say things like that.
I don't know.
And we are definitely doing it.
Yeah, times change and, you know, standards and expectations change and things like that. And I was watching a Jasper Carrot DVD the other day. Remember Jasper Carrot?
I do remember Jasper Carrot.
Jasper Carrot lived just up the road from me when I was growing up.
Yeah.
In Knowle, in Solihull, in the West Midlands.
That's right.
In England. And Jasper Carrot, ladies and gents, is an English comedian who started out in the 70s.
Yeah.
And he's, you know, a household name who's on TV all the time. And I watched one of his DVDs. And there was some pretty off-colour material in there. One of the jokes was about how he was in the lift at the BBC and the lift doors opened and a bunch of African guys got in.
Yeah.
And they were like African guys from like the Serengeti in their African clothing.
Yeah.
And he got in and he was making jokes about how he was stuck in the lift with a bunch of African guys and the audience were all laughing. And it was like, bloody hell.
That's
borderline.
I know. But then, I mean, I just read this book, The L-Shaped Room by Lynn Reed Banks. And great book, really interesting. And the story is she becomes pregnant. It's 1960s London. And she becomes pregnant and she's not married. And, you know, she's this young actress. And because of this happening, her father throws her out of home and she has to go and live in Fulham in a cheap flat. And within this flat, there is a Jew and... there is a Jew and there is a black person from Africa and there's a gay person, I think, something like this. And she, the writer and the protagonist are quite left wing and sort of open minded. But these things are all, the way she talks about them are so dated.
Yeah.
You know, and even herself, her situation, like she knows she's going to lose her job the minute they find out she's pregnant. And times have changed so radically.
Yeah.
You know, because...
So that was just an accepted part of the storyline.
It was just how people thought. So she wasn't trying to sort of... If anything, she was saying, look how open-minded I am, my flatmate, you know, and this guy that I'm falling in love with is Jewish. Oh my gosh, imagine!
Yeah.
And
well, that makes me think about a lot of French comedy films that I see. And it seems that a lot of the time the jokes are basically someone pointing out that someone has a different ethnicity. And the hilarious thing is like, hey, look, these people are Jewish and they behave in a Jewish way. Look at these people are black and they do black things. These people are North African and they do their North African type things. And these people are sort of Catholic and they do their Catholic things. And it's just simply pointing them out is a hilarious thing in France.
Exactly.
And I realized I think it's because on an official level, on the state level, like the state, if it does a survey like a census every 10 years, it's illegal to record someone's ethnicity and record their religion.
That's true.
So because it's illegal to compartmentalize people by religion and ethnicity, because that's illegal, somehow that makes it a lot more risky and funny when you do it in a comedy context to just sort of... to show, hey, these people are all different. Look, he's being black. And that's like there's a sort of, haha, like a little cheeky laugh that you can get, an exciting laugh that you can get from it. Whereas in England, that's all very open. Everyone's, you know, we're very used to ticking boxes to describe our ethnicity in like, you know, white European or black British or black Caribbean British or whatever it is. And so just having it pointed out in a comedy show is not really enough. And it just seems so simple and basic.
So like, facile.
They're black.
Exactly. Very facile and very sort of just there's nothing there.
I've seen that in social situations all the time. Whenever there's like a black person there, there's just people making jokes, which are basically the joke is, hey, look, he's black. And then they all have a laugh about it, including the black person. I'm like, what?
What, in France?
Yeah. Yeah.
I know. There is something very curious. The other day I was at the Pan Am and Sarah was doing a set. It was a French comic. He was white. And he said something about like, I can't remember what joke he said. And he was like, if I was going to tell an anti-Semitic joke, I would say, there's free ham to like the Jewish people or whatever. Mm-hmm. And they'd be conflicted because they want something free because, you know, the stereotype is Jewish people are very like tight-fisted, you know, mm-hmm. all about the money. But of course they can't eat ham. So, but I was like, you're using that as an example of like what I wouldn't say, but you have just said it. So do you see why that's not good? Like there's nothing clever with that joke. If you're trying to undermine something, because he was trying to say something more sophisticated, and then he was like, but an unsophisticated one is this, but he got a laugh. Yeah. And it's like, but then that doesn't work. Do you see why you are part of that problem? Because you have just told that joke,
having his cake.
Which is not funny.
Having his cake and eating it too.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
But I really don't want to be too judgmental about things like the Russian Comedy Club.
Yeah.
I really don't want to be judgmental about that because I don't want to fall into the same trap that I always feel so bad about when people watch English comedy.
What have you sent that people have been, what if something that you just think is hilarious and everyone else is like, no?
Well, I don't know if everyone else is like, no. I don't know. But what I have done in the past, examples of that, of usually in the classroom situation, and I've put something on because I've gone, in my heart, I'm like, I love this. You know, I love this so much and I have to share it because it's great. And I have struggled so hard to try and find to contrive and convolute English lessons out of videos that I love so much, and I don't know if examples might be Monty Python's The Funniest Joke in the World sketch.
Very difficult Monty Python to translate.
But the thing is about that joke, that sketch, which is basically a man in England, a joke writer, ends up writing the joke, which is the funniest. It's so funny that you can't read it or hear it without dying.
Yeah.
So anyone who reads or hears the joke will die. And there's like lots of hilarious deaths. Like all the guys in the Monty Python are doing these ridiculous deaths of like falling over and their legs falling in the air and stuff like that. But also just they take the idea and really push it to the absolute extreme, which is basically when the army find out about the joke, they decide to weaponize it, and you see them attempting to use it in the battlefield, and it's a huge success. And there are all these soldiers, and they create a German version of the joke, and the soldiers are running through the battlefields shouting the jokes, and the Germans are falling down from the trees and like, you know, like dying of laughter in the trenches and stuff. And the Germans attempt to make their version of the joke, and it doesn't work, and all this sort of thing. And they capture an English soldier, and they demand to know what the joke is, and
you can't tell him.
They torture him by tickling his ear with a feather, you know, and it becomes like laughter is like, you know, this torture thing, and eventually they tell him the joke, and you know, so kind of this weird, it goes off into this weird fantasy land. And I've played that to them before, and I've felt like, you know, after 3 minutes, it's just like they're all sitting there, and it's just awful.
Exactly. But the thing is, it's also context, you know, cultural, but as well as like, you're not the same when you're in a classroom as when you're sitting in a comedy club. We don't know what they've just seen. I mean, they might have, you know, there's so much different context. Like, there's loads of stuff I'll laugh at in a comedy club, but if I saw the clip, I might just think, that's a bit boring.
True, but I can, they don't have to laugh out loud, but I do get the sense when someone has appreciated it. And they want more, and I know the difference between that and people who are just like, I'm completely switched off, or I'm thinking of jumping out the window. Just the atmosphere in the room, you could just stir it with a spoon, and it's just like, oh God, sorry everyone.
It's true, we've all been there.
Yeah,
we have all been there.
And I'm you know, really digging deep as a teacher, and like getting them to try and repeat the lines, and I'm explaining the vocab, but I feel obliged to, you know, do that on the podcast as well. Like I told you, I'm doing an episode or two about Alan Partridge, and the whole time I'm thinking, what on earth are they going to think of this? Are they going to hate it? Am I going to be able to unlock it for them and like unlock this puzzle for them, and then they would suddenly discover it? And is it possible, or is it just an impossible? Is it Mission Impossible to get learners of English to appreciate Alan Partridge?
I would really like to know. This is something I find fascinating, because Alan Partridge works on so many levels.
I think it's the most it's the character with the most depth that I can think of.
Incredibly.
So much depth. It dips into Shakespearean levels of hubris and like the fatal flaws of ambition and the darkness and all this sort of thing.
I think it's because I've seen this character has been attempted many times. In fact, I did a show just the other day and someone tried that kind of character, you know, that sort of fatally flawed person, et cetera, but who can't see it. But Alan Bart, I mean, it's so perfected. I mean, he's been doing it such a long time now, but even the sort of original Partridge stuff, it's so good. It's so funny. And it's so spot on, like from everything, the way he looks, the voice, the accent, the pacing. Like if you listen to the Alan Partridge books, like rather than read them, but hear the audio books, I mean, they're works of art.
They really are.
So good.
I mean, I can't think of a time that I've been so impressed by an audio book.
Yeah.
I mean, really, it's like literally every single page has got a laugh on it.
Yeah.
And it's a good one too.
But all of them work on many levels, and it's sustained and it's thought through and it's clever. But it's got so many things that appeal to us as like English, whether it's his accent and the idea. And then, because if you're a very direct, we were talking about this before, if you're kind of direct or indirect, you know, it's less embarrassing, you know, because you can't show off in England. Like this is the ultimate sin.
To show off.
Yeah, exactly.
And to be unaware of yourself.
And Alan Partridge both shows off, is unaware, and then is exceedingly aware and open. And, you know, and it's, I don't know how he does it.
It's really hard to explain.
So hard.
It's extremely hard to explain. But
so if you're only understanding it like linguistically, if you just understand what he's saying, you're not understanding it. Yeah. You have to understand it on every single level. So learners of English, if they find that interesting, I'd love to know if people find it interesting.
It's an experiment for me, and I've done those episodes before and they've gone down okay. You know, they haven't like destroyed the podcast or anything. You know, it's not like everyone just jumps ship when I do a British comedy episode. Quite the opposite. I think people do enjoy them, but I have to work particularly hard to try and present them in the right way and to explain it and to let the comedy breathe and, you know, not suffocate it by explaining it too much. Yeah. And yet also explain it down to minute details, because it's, you know, the devil is in the details, and often it's about specific details and context. That's what makes things funny.
Well, exactly. And because he's such an amazing writer, it is about every word he chooses. Like he doesn't just happen upon a town or, you know, all of, because he's great at explaining things in detail, like the shoes he's wearing, like Nomad was the last one I read.
Yeah. I've got a good example of that, which I was thinking of including in my episode about Alan Partridge, and it's from the audio book, and it's the moment in his career. It's from I, Partridge, the first audio book. Mm. It's the moment in his career when he's got a job at the BBC and he's on the day to day, the news program. He's the sports guy and he's suddenly in the meeting room with all the other people, and he's out of his depth because there's everyone else is like university or Cambridge or Oxford educated.
Yeah.
They're talking about politics. They're talking about the economy.
Mm.
And Alan is obviously out of his depth because he can't compete on that level. And so he goes over to make tea and he gets completely obsessed by the hygiene around the sugar bowl.
Hmm.
And it, to the point where it's like he's losing himself in this minute detail because he can't handle the situation he's in, the fact that everyone else is so much more educated than him. And the description of what happens when you take a spoon that's come out of the tea and that goes into the milk, the way he describes the way it turns into it congeals into a mix of tea sugar crystals, and then I have to try and play it to you.
You need to find it.
If you hold on a second. Okay, so I think I've found the clip. This is from the I, Partridge audiobook. The book is called I, Partridge, We Need to Talk About Alan, and it's basically Alan Partridge's life story as written by him, and it's full of factual inaccuracies and things like that. But this is him describing being in a room with people who are more intelligent than him, and listen to the way he goes over to the tea making area, and he just starts to describe. He just picks up on the sugar and the way that they're putting the spoon back in the sugar, and he uses this as his way of trying to somehow get a grip on the situation.
In attendance included Christopher Morris, anchor, Rosie May, environment, Kevin Smear, roving reporter, Peter O'Hanrahan, economics editor, and yours truly, sport plus the Paralympics. I picked a chair and sat down quietly and effectively. It was a good start, but I needed to do more. I took a deep breath and prepared to introduce myself. But as soon as I heard the level of their chit-chat, I froze. They were using words, ideas, and concepts that you simply never heard in Norfolk, not even in Norwich. I resolved to keep my mouth shut until I'd acclimatized/acclimated. Phrases swirled around the room. Where does Labour stand on that? It's over for Milosevic. Alan, could you pass the biscuits? The Rodney King thing is going to be massive. GDP's down by 0.5% this quarter. Alan, the biscuits. The Home Office aren't going to comment, apparently. Fine, I'll get them myself, then. How in the name of holy living heck was I going to bust my way into this conversation? I don't know, I answered inside my head. On the table next to me was a tea urn. Now, this was a plus point because I love tea urns. Still do. There's something very reassuring about the concept of hot beverages dispensed from a lovely big drum. Of course, your problem with any kind of communal drink station is the sugar bowl. People put the spoon back in the bowl after stirring in their sugar. No problem with that, you might think. Well, think again. The residual moisture acts as a caking agent, forming the granules into unsightly asymmetric clumps. Worse still, those clumps are stained a grubby brown by the tannin-rich tea. Not nice. Not nice at all. And let's not forget the germ issue. Putting a damp spoon back in the bowl is the tea-drinking equivalent of sharing a needle, and I did not want to end up with their tea-drinking equivalent of AIDS. Instantly it struck me that if their thing was intimidating intellect, my thing could be beverage-related hygiene. Of course, later I remembered that I already had a thing, namely sport plus Paralympics, but I wasn't thinking straight, which should go some way to explaining what happened next. Kevin Smear, roving reporter, approached. This seemed somehow appropriate, because while the others had stayed where they were, he had literally roved over. Hello, Alan. Hello. Guys, I'm just saying hello to Alan. The rest of them nodded in my direction, using their heads. What are you doing over there? Said Rosie May, Environment. Nothing much, I smiled. Just thinking that you lot have probably got tea AIDS. Wham! I knew it was a winner as soon as it left my lips. If you'd stuck me in a room with a typewriter for 10 years, I would never have come up with one that good.
Okay.
Oh, that's such a treat.
Yeah, I'm just thinking that some of you have probably got tea AIDS. He's got no idea that he's an absolute nightmare. Amber, thank you for talking to me on the podcast in the usual rambling way.
Very rambling.
Yeah.
I mean, we rambled around.
But you know, the original idea was going to be a lot more organized. But because Paul had to leave kind of early, you know, it meant that it sort of shifted things around. And
I know. And we've not been hanging out. We've all been busy.
Yeah.
You've been busy. Yeah. Dadding. Paul has been filming. I've been, I don't know what I've been doing.
You've been
on holiday.
Mumming and doing stand-up and things like that.
So we had to catch up, and then that kind of eclipsed all your organisation.
I have to try and get the three of us in a room together again soon.
Let's do it soon.
I need to book it in advance, because Paul's a very busy man, but he's especially busy.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you, Amber, for talking to us. I'm sure the Lepsters appreciate it very much, and we look forward to reading their comments in the comments section.
Very much so.
Yes, okay. All right, well, let's say goodbye to the Lepster then, shall we? Thanks for listening, everyone. And until next time, goodbye!
Bye!
Bye! Bye! Bye! Bye! Bye! Bye! Bye! So there you go, folks. Quite a lot packed into that episode. Lots of questions and points about comedy in different cultures, and that video from Russia too. About that video, on balance, I would say that I personally didn't find it that funny when I first saw it. I found it a little bit odd. It's kind of like a big family entertainment show with lots of attention being paid to what I expect are celebrities in Russia in the audience. The comedians are just sitting on the stage, which is kind of fine, I think, because you don't always need lots of stage movement and stuff as long as the material's good. But I got the joke, which is that this is how it feels when you listen to people speaking English. But I found it really quite weird, the interpretation of the British guy. I found that kind of a strange interpretation, but also fascinating. Because basically he does that sort of kind of stuff. I mean, that's not really a fair representation of the way the impression goes. It's got more range to it than that. But he basically is very stuttery and hesitant and quite incoherent. And it's, for me, interesting to sort of look at British people through the eyes of Russians in this case. And I guess this means that British people must seem to be hesitant when they speak. And I expect this also comes from hearing British people with accents, like perhaps the Cockney or Northern accents, which must be difficult to understand. But the result in the impression sounds nothing like any of those accents, really. It doesn't really sound, for me, like an English voice so much as just garbled kind of stuttering. It's a sort of garbled, lost in translation version of a British person with certain traits highlighted and emphasized, perhaps because they don't quite match the Russian way or something like that. I found the impression of the English guy more weird than funny. I felt like, oh, is that what they think we sound like? You know, did we come across as being so hesitant? The Indian guy is sort of a funny impression in that he's got the tone and the rhythm right, but it's a pretty broad impression and, in fact, more of a caricature than a full impression. Also, there's just the issue that copying an Indian accent, if you're not Indian, is somehow considered a bit inappropriate in the UK. I talked about that to Sugar Sammy, who is Indian, like Canadian Indian. And we talked about that in one of our episodes. Check in the archive, the two episodes with Sugar Sammy. We talked about that subject. He was a great guest. It was really good fun talking to him. So in this video, the Russian Comedy Club video, I still don't know where that comedian is from, but he could be Indian, maybe. But basically, I get the joke. This is how it sounds for you when you hear these people. I didn't find it funny at first, but actually, I admit I'm finding it more and more funny as I watch it again and again. As I've gone through the kind of, you know, just the reaction of like, oh my God, is that what they think? And I've sort of gone through that now and I can just enjoy it as a sort of a funny little sketch. It's also funny to me that I often talk about the challenge of showing UK comedy to learners of English and how they don't get it. And then someone else sends me a comedy video from another country and I have the same reaction, more or less. So it's kind of interesting the way these things work. I expect that there are people in the audience listening now who know a lot more about this than us. So leave comments telling me more about this Russian TV comedy club video. I'd like to know, who are they? What's, you know, what do you think about it as well from your point of view? How is that show received in Russia? And generally, what do you think of the video? Also, generally, I'm heartened to read some of your comments relating to the recent episodes about comedy that I've done. I've got lots of episodes in the pipeline. And over the last week or two, I've been working on all these episodes at the same time. So as I record this now, I've only just uploaded the second Alan Partridge episode. So that's sort of where I am now as I record this. This is going to get published later. But as I record this, I've just uploaded the second Alan Partridge episode. And there haven't been many comments on the Alan Partridge ones yet, partly because I haven't added those links to the episode archive. So it might have been difficult to find the page. But also, it's a sort of slightly disturbing silence on the Alan Partridge front as I get no comments from anyone. I'm thinking, hello, have I confused everyone? Time shift. Hello. It's now 1 week later. It's 1 week after I recorded the outro to this episode. I'm just interrupting myself from the future somehow. I don't know how this works. It's too confusing. It's like Back to the Future Part 2. I don't really understand what's going on, but I'm enjoying it. Anyway, so it's now a week later, and I have received more messages than I did last week when I recorded this part of the episode. Thank you for sending your comments. I will go through those messages in a moment. But first, here are the messages that I had received at the time I originally recorded this outro last week, which was just after I'd released the Edinburgh Fringe jokes episode and the first two Alan episodes. So first of all, messages I received at that time, and then after we've heard those messages, I'll interrupt myself again from the future and I'll read out some of the messages I've received in the last week. And they're all relating to the comedy episodes. You know, I've been wondering, oh, what do people think? Well, I've had some messages, so I will be reading them out in a moment. All right? Do you understand? Okay, let's now time shift back to the past, or the present, as you thought it was, and then we'll continue. Okay? I'm confused now as well. Time, I don't understand it. Have I confused everyone? I've no idea. I did get one comment from Salwa, and Salwa said, This is on the first Alan Partridge episode. Salwa said, "Oh, that was really funny and enjoyable. Thank you very much for introducing Alan Partridge to us. I didn't find the comedy difficult to understand at all. In fact, some of the jokes made me laugh out loud." That's nice. And then before I did the Partridge episodes, I did the episode about the best jokes from the Edinburgh Festival Fringe. And this one came in from Mary Angel Garcia, who wrote, "Hi, Luke, I hope you're doing all right. I'd like to tell you that you should continue making these podcasts about comedy. They're quite enjoyable and help us improve our English. As you just said, understanding jokes in our second language can be the hardest thing. By the way, please don't forget my proposal of making an episode about British pop music. I'm definitely looking forward to listening to it. Lots of hugs from Venezuela." Okay, well, I'm glad you want me to keep doing the comedy episodes. That's great. And yes, an episode about British pop music. A while ago, I did a few sort of PowerPoint presentations. I was working for a school and they sent me to different businesses to do presentations in English just for fun. And my topic was a history of British pop, and I've got these slides and everything for it. So I should turn that into an episode, which I think I mentioned before. Another comment on the Edinburgh jokes episode from Anastasia, who wrote, "Thank you, Luke. I'm really keen on your excellent joke explanations. I think English humour is fabulous and would like to know more about that stuff. You make all things absolutely clear, and I like your positive attitude to your work and to life. Cheers." Well, cheers to you, Anastasia. Thank you. This one from Tanya, who wrote, "That's a pleasure, Luke. I've got nearly all of the jokes, but some after you read them several times. So it's fun, of course. I know what learners usually say about English humour. I myself thought about it that way from the start. But, you know, the humour is not just there lying on the surface. It turns out to be intellectual. It gives work to your brain. And finally, you get it. Cool. This is the first audio I've listened on your site. I downloaded the app and I'm enjoying it. English is becoming closer to me. This is the first episode of the podcast we ever listened to, Tanya." Wow, fantastic. I hope you enjoy listening to all the others as well. Vladimir wrote this on the same episode. "Hi, Luke. I really enjoyed this new episode on Edinburgh Festival Fringe. Thank you so much. The jokes all became clear when you explained some of them. My favourite one was the one about the watch and a log. Do you remember that? Hello, I'd like to buy a watch. Analog? No, just a watch, please. I also recall some funny jokes in my country, but I don't know what the style of joke that is. I've just translated one from my language." Well, I would consider this one to be a Sherlock Holmes joke. There's a few Sherlock Holmes jokes out there. So this is one translated by Vladimir, and it actually works. It's nice. So here we go. Dr. Watson asks Sherlock, "Can you hear this sinister howl, Mr. Holmes?" A howl is like the noise a wolf would make, or maybe a wild dog. Ow! And that would be a sinister howl, a howl that sounds kind of scary. Dr. Watson asks Sherlock, "Can you hear this sinister howl, Mr. Holmes?" "Oh!" And Holmes says, "Yes, that's probably the Hound of the Baskervilles." And then on another day, "But what is this sinister silence around us?" "It's the fish of the Baskervilles, Doctor." Yeah, I like it. I think it translates. What are the other Sherlock Holmes ones? There's the classic Dr. Watson and Sherlock Holmes are camping one night, and in the middle of the night, Dr. Watson is woken up by Sherlock Holmes, who says, "Watson, look up and tell me what you see." And Watson looks up and he says, "I can see the stars and the constellations in the night sky, and this suggests to me that the summer solstice is nearly upon us as we see the arrangement of stars in the sky." And Sherlock Holmes says, "No, you fool, someone's stolen our tent." Because obviously how could Watson see all those things if they still had their tent? Someone had stolen their tent. Okay, then. And there's that Sherlock Holmes joke that I made up once. I actually made up my own Sherlock Holmes joke. And because I was with my friends, my brother and a couple of friends of ours, one weekend we went mountain climbing and camping together, and we spent an evening in the pub, and we spent the entire time playing pool and just coming up with completely ridiculous Sherlock Holmes jokes, and all around the catchphrase "Elementary, my dear Watson," which is what Sherlock Holmes famously says, "Elementary, my dear Watson." So we were coming up with stuff like Sherlock Holmes and Watson are on a geology field trip. And Watson goes down to look at some rocks by the river, and he says, "Holmes, what are these rocks here?" What kind of rocks are these by the river? And Holmes says, sedimentary, my dear Watson. You know, the kind of thing. You can make loads of stupid jokes up with that catchphrase. Anyway, the fish of the Baskervilles, I like it. Anya Chu wrote this on the joke episode. A little ninja from Taiwan here. I've been listening to your podcast for over a year and I've been enjoying it so much. I really appreciate your work on all the great content. I've just finished the new episode of Jokes from the Edinburgh Fringe and I loved it. I was on a bus when I listened to the episode and I kept getting giggles, which I tried very hard to disguise as coughs. British humour is just always on point. Anyway, thank you again for all the effort on such excellent episodes. Please keep up the great work. Thank you for your comment. That's very sweet. Svetlana, with a surname I can't pronounce, Mukhamedjanova, Svetlana, anyway, wrote this as a comment for one of the premium episodes. The most recent, at the time of recording this, the most recent one, Premium Episode 6, Part 3, in which I had some fun during the pronunciation drills by doing some sort of funny voices, like posh accents and things like that. And she wrote, "Hi, Luke, regarding... Premium Episode 6, Part 3. Please don't stop making fun. I love your sense of humour." Well, that's very nice. That's very nice of you. So there you go. It's lovely to read your comments. Still not many comments about the Alan Partridge episodes as I speak here. And I really wonder what you think about those ones. As I said, I've just recorded and uploaded Part 2. I haven't done Part 3 yet. I was hoping to wait and see what people thought before I launched into it, but I'm going to have to record that episode soon as well, without perhaps knowing what you're all thinking. So, you know, put me out of my misery. Tell me what you think of Alan Partridge. I'd love to know. Time shift. It's now the future again. I'm recording this a week after recording the rest of this outro, so we're back to the future. And there are now on my website more comments on the Alan Partridge episodes, which I'd like to share with you. So here are some ones that came in the last 7 days or so. So from Alan Partridge episode 1, Hero said, "Hello, Luke. I really enjoy the Knowing Me, Knowing You aha show with the child genius. It was so funny, I listened to it 3 times. Without your precise explanations, though, I wouldn't have been able to get all the jokes. Thank you." Well, you're welcome, Hero. I'm very glad to read that. Generally, I haven't received anything other than positive responses to those Alan episodes, which is very encouraging for me. Let me continue sharing some of those comments. Victoria Lucina said, "I adore listening to your episodes about British comedy, and the way that you explain to us some bits of language is perfect. I've listened to the Alan Partridge Interviews Child Prodigy Simon Fisher video at least 5 times, and I liked it more than the first clip that you used. It's really interesting that in this case we laugh with Alan and at him. I'm looking forward to the next episodes like this one. The world needs more. The world needs to explore British comedy in depth with you." Okay, good. From the Alan Partridge episode Part 2, Hero again wrote this. "Hello, Luke." "Hello, Hero. This second episode is a little more challenging for me than the previous one because the jokes are more subtle. However, the more I listen to your explanations, the clearer the humorous points became to me. Yes, Alan Partridge is an absolute walking disaster. He makes me cringe so much I can't listen to each one of his episodes in one go. Again, without your excellent guide, I wouldn't be able to understand all the nuances and layers of this comedy. Thank you very much, Luke." Marat wrote on Partridge Part 2, "Hello, Luke. My name is Marat. I'm from Russia. I really enjoy listening to your podcast in general and these Alan Partridge episodes in particular. In the first part, you've mentioned The Office series as being full of cringy situations. I haven't seen the British one, but I have seen the American one with Steve Carell. And that was really all about cringy moments. Have you seen the American one? Which one is more cringy in your opinion?" And Marat says, "Cringy is a new word to me, so I use it everywhere now." Marat, I have seen the American Office. I haven't seen it as much as the British Office because I've watched those episodes lots of times because I enjoy them a lot. And, I mean, they're both cringy. They're both full of cringy and awkward moments. But for me, the British version is the king of cringe just because I don't know. I just feel like those situations are much more familiar to me, so it feels so much closer to home. I can imagine that I could even be one of those characters. Like, I could be the Martin Freeman character if I'd just taken a different direction in my life. I could have ended up working in an office like that. So yeah, it's more personally more cringy, the British version. From the Alan Partridge Part 3 episode, Zdenek Lukas from Zdenek's English Podcast wrote this. He said, "Hi Luke, I just want to let you know that I've been thoroughly enjoying the episodes about Alan Partridge. I'm currently in the middle of the third one. I love this character and actually played the clip from the first episode, the one with the child prodigy, to teach types of questions and the pronoun whom." So Zdenek is an English teacher. And he said, "I'm a big fan of these episodes, and I think you clearly managed to do justice to this character. Thank you for your podcast." Thank you, Zdenek. Pepe124 said, "After you spent several hours on three episodes, I think we all should spend a couple of minutes writing a comment. We owe that to you." Pepe actually wrote, "We own that to you." It's not own, but O, O-W-E. We owe that to you. "You are the teacher every school of English should have." Wow, that's nice. "The method you used on this series was just brilliant, giving the introduction and background with the cultural references as well, letting us listen and guess, and then going back over the clips was really helpful to test, and it improves my listening skills." Okay. "I also like the content itself, that is the comedy, although I must say I like the first two episodes more, but that's just because there were more kind of jokes in those episodes. Thank you very much, Luke, for all of this. Keep up the great job." Okay. Thank you. I will. By the way, I've noticed a couple of mistakes in some comments. One of them was, it was "keep up with." And what people want to say is "keep doing the job," right? Keep it up. Okay, but not "keep up with," because "keep up with" is like when you're trying to match the same speed as somebody else. So I'm trying to keep up with my competitors, you could say, or in a race, you try and keep up with the people who are in front of you by running at the same speed as them. So not "keep up with your great job." It should just be maybe "keep up the good work," "keep up the great job," "keep doing these episodes," "keep doing something," "keep something up," "keep up something," but not "keep up with something," because that means something else. Okay, so "keep up the great job," or "keep doing the great job." Tatiana said this. She didn't say this. She wrote it. I don't know. Maybe she said it while she was typing it. I don't know how Tatiana types. Anyway, she wrote this. "Hi, Luke. It's the first time I've come out of the woodwork. Just to say a few words about the Alan Partridge episodes. I've enjoyed all of them. They give a little insight into real English, the genuine one, that is what British people really laugh at. And that's amazing. Thank you for that. They're right, the people who say, if you understand comedy, you understand the language. Your explanations before listening are so detailed that I find almost no difficulties to understand most of Alan's words, and it's valuable. I tried to find those clips on YouTube. They're all, by the way, Tatiana, you didn't need to try and find them because they're all embedded on the page. So all of those Alan Partridge episodes, they've got videos embedded on the page for most of them. Anyway, Tatiana said, "I tried to find those clips on YouTube, and they are even better with video. I'd say because you can watch the facial expressions and body gestures. But then I watched some more, and those that are not scrutinized on the podcast, and it was a nightmare. I could understand hardly any of it, and most jokes just flew over my head. I felt so disappointed. I see now that proficiency level is as far from me as the moon." Well, Tatiana, I mean, you know, as we know, comedy is often the hardest thing to understand, especially something like Alan Partridge. It's very, as we know, I've said it many times, it's layered, it's difficult to understand. So don't feel too bad if you don't understand Alan's stuff without my help. It's some of the more challenging stuff you can listen to. So she said, "Thank you for doing your job for us. Your podcast is, at this point, one of the major ways of improving my English. I listen and re-listen, take notes, revise from them from time to time, and so on. Please keep going with your comedy episodes. They're great." Thank you, Tatiana. Damien wrote this simply, the episodes about Alan Partridge, generally all episodes about British comedians, are brilliant. Many thanks. Well, you're welcome, Damien. Nikolai Polanski wrote this, all three episodes are very nice, even though it's sometimes hard to get. Even though, not even so. Even though it's sometimes hard to get why it's funny. I mean, to be desperate, stupid, mean and lonely. Why is that funny? It's a good point, Nikolai. I mean, Alan's character, really, when you get beneath the surface, he is desperate and stupid and mean and lonely. Why is that funny? Well, I mean, I can't really explain it, but all I can do is say that the reason why it's good comedy is because it has depth. The depth, the complexity, the pathos of the fact that we are, following a rather sad person, that's got pathos to it. It invokes complicated feelings, you see. And our humour in the UK or British comedy, we like our comedy to be like mixed in with the real stuff of life, and that means the sadness. I mean, I'm sure that it's the same everywhere, that really, when you think about it, the best kinds of comedy explore not just the light stuff, not just the colourful, fluffy, harmless things, but proper comedy goes into the real stuff of existence and some of the harder ideas to deal with. I mean, maybe that's the appeal of something like Alan Partridge, that it is looking at quite a dark subject when you really get into it. It's quite a dark subject, but we're able to explore these dark ideas through the medium of comedy, and it makes us laugh at while also making us feel a complex range of feelings. It's very hard to explain, really, but that's kind of what comedy does. A laugh, it's not just something simple. Laughing could be quite a complicated sort of process of catharsis and recognizing something that's quite hard to accept in yourself. I don't know. It's really complicated from a psychological point of view. But anyway, Nikolai, it may be difficult to understand why such a sad, desperate person is a good subject for comedy, but, I mean, I don't know, I can't really explain it. But Nikolai went on to say, or write, I mean, you said before, try to watch this as a drama, and then you'll appreciate the comedy. And he said, well, it seems like a drama to me, smiley face. Well, yeah, I mean, I guess that's the point. I said that in the episode I did about using UK comedy shows to learn English, that you've got to try and sometimes, instead of expecting it to be a laugh-a-minute stuff and colourful and laughs and all happy, fun stuff and laughing all the time, instead approach these shows like they are tragedies or dramas, something like that. And then that's the best way to get through to the heart of the character. And then once you've done that, once you've got into the real heart of the matter, then you might find that you're finding it funny as a result. But don't expect to be entertained from the beginning. Instead, it's more of a character study, which you can then find funny afterwards. That's just a bit of advice for approaching comedy shows in a second language. Don't expect to laugh a lot. Instead, expect it to be some sort of character study. The laughter might come afterwards when you understand it. Nikolai said, it's funny, but also sad. But the episodes are top-notch. Thanks for the great work that you've done. You're welcome. Ilya, so just a couple more comments. Ilya said, I love it. I want more episodes about British comedy. It's one of my favourite topics. Nice one. Francesca Benzi said, just a few comments, but all of them are a big thumbs up. Meaning she said, there are just a few comments on the website, but all of them are very positive, which is true. That's nice. And Francesca said, I've never heard of Alan Partridge before. I had never heard of Alan Partridge. Little correction there. I'd never heard of Alan Partridge before listening to your podcast. So thank you. I had a very good time with each of the three episodes. Brits' behaviour can often be weird from an Italian point of view. And listening to your podcast builds up my knowledge of how different we are. Thank you. Yaron said, coming out of the shadows for a moment to say that I like the Alan Partridge episodes. In a way, it reminds me of the brilliant episode about Ali G that you did a few years ago, which I recommend to anyone who hasn't listened to it yet. Thank you, Luke. So Yaron mentioned the Ali G episode. That was actually the very first episode I did about British comedy, and it was probably about 4 years ago that I did that, maybe even more. It's one of the early episodes, maybe even 100 and something. But I've done lots of episodes about British comedy, by the way. So if you enjoyed these Alan Partridge ones, you should check the archive. But I'm going to list some of those episodes in a moment. But I find your comments very reassuring. That's why I kind of read them out. I just wanted to establish that, you know, despite my doubts and my concerns, your comments seem to suggest that people actually have enjoyed these episodes. They've been a bit of a challenge, maybe, but ultimately it's been good, right? So I find your comments very reassuring. I'm very glad to read them. I will do more episodes about comedy in the future. In the meantime, check the episode archive for other British comedy episodes. And here's a list of the episodes. So I did British comedy Ali G. That was episode 156. British comedy Peter Cook and Dudley Moore. Episode 172. British comedy Monty Python's Flying Circus. That was episode 195. I also did one about the Monty Python film, one of their films, which was called Monty Python and the Holy Grail. That was episode 202. Two episodes about British stand-up comedian Tim Vine, who does lots of quick jokes in his comedy sets. That was episodes 313 and 316. Two episodes about Limmy's Show. That's a comedy show produced by BBC Scotland. And that was episodes 427 and 428. Then there was one about the stand-up comedian, the brilliant musical stand-up comedian Bill Bailey. That's episode 462. Then there was one about John Bishop, who is a sort of popular comedian from the Merseyside area who speaks with a Liverpool accent. That was episode 469. And I did one episode called Learning English with UK TV Shows, in which I give lots of advice and suggestions and tips for how to approach UK comedy TV shows as a way to improve your English. And that was episode number what? Oh, I don't know. Anyway, it's in the archive. It was quite recent. It was from January this year, and it was called Learning English with UK TV Comedy Shows. I also have episodes about telling jokes and explaining humour in social situations. Just get into the archive and find out for yourself. Remember to use the search function on your browser. If you're using a Mac, just do Command F and then search for and then type a word. On a PC, I think it's Control F and then type your word, and that search function will reveal all instances of that word on the page that you're checking. In this case, it would be the episode archive. So Command F or Control F, search for the word maybe comedy or British comedy, and that will reveal all of those entries. And it's a quick way of navigating through the episode archive. So check those out in the archive. But in the meantime, you should also sign up for LEP Premium. I've got new episodes in the pipeline. I'll be working on one of those episodes this afternoon, working diligently, doing all of my language analysis. Get the premium episodes on the LEP app. Sign up at teacherluke.co.uk/premium for some hot English action, helping you deal with vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation. And you can just have a bit of fun in the process too, hopefully. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. And thanks for all your comments. It's very reassuring and nice to read them. I'll speak to you again on the podcast soon. But for now, goodbye. Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye.
Thanks for listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times.
Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare tri-term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
If you enjoyed this episode of Luke's English Podcast, consider signing up for Luke's English Podcast Premium. You'll get regular premium episodes with stories, vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation teaching from me, and the usual moments of humour and fun. Plus, with your subscription, you will be directly supporting my work and making this whole podcast project possible. For more information about Luke's English Podcast Premium, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info.